As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to the Race IndyCar podcast. We're back after a little break, unfortunately not with JR, who has not been able to make today's recording, but he'll be back for our next episode, I'm very sure of that. If you have missed JR and you're going to miss him on this episode, then you can always go and check out his Instagram, JR Hildebrand, where he's been driving Porsches and having a lot of fun. So if you remember on our last episode, the last time we spoke to him, he was buying a NASCAR, and since we've last recorded, he's now having a lot of fun in Porsches up at Laguna Seca. So definitely go and check that out on social media. He posted a brilliant onboard lap. So that was cool. Coming up on today's show, we've got some very interesting interviews for you, I hope. We've got Marcus Ericsson, who we haven't spoke to since he made his big move from Chip Ganassi Racing to Andretti Autosport. And we've also got Yuri Vips, who made his IndyCar debut not long ago for Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan, did the last two races of the season, and yeah, is hoping that he can come back and do next year, which we'll ask him about in a little bit more detail. So that's what we've got coming up on the show. In between, we'll also do a little bit of news and just update you on some of the things that have been happening in IndyCar in this kind of little break where we haven't had a pod, so we'll definitely get to that. But first, without further ado, we'll head over to Marcus Ericsson, who's going to talk about his big move. He's going to talk about the IndyCar hybrid package as well that he was testing last week. He's also going to talk about his new teammates. He's going to talk about the mental coach that he employed for this year and how that worked through the season. And he's going to talk a little bit about being wanted by Andretti and what that meant to him after a long career of driving hard to be, you know, getting that big deal that he'd really wanted. He's talked about that a lot before, and now he has it. So he can tell you all about it. And here he is. Hello and welcome back to the podcast, Marcus Ericsson, Andretti Autosport driver, Marcus Ericsson. That's going to take a little while to get used to, but how does that feel to hear that out loud now and after, I guess, quite a few months of trying to get things sorted and not really knowing exactly what was going to happen and how your future was going to pan out? You know, how does that feel now to be part of that Andretti family?
Yeah, it's like you say, it's going to probably take a little while to get used to saying that and not saying Chip Ganassi Racing. But yeah, no, it feels great. You know, it's been a while since the end of the season, but I haven't really been able to start working with the team until really last week. So yeah, it feels good that sort of process has started and getting to know the people. And, you know, it's this sport is a lot about relationships, and building those relationships is very important. So I'm going to put a lot of time and effort into that in the off season. But yeah, it feels great to get started.
We'll get on to you working with the team a little bit because you did that last week, and we'll ask you about that shortly. I guess I just from a starting point just wanted to ask you how you feel about kind of how you fit into this team. And I guess a lot of people will look at Andretti and, you know, really rate how quick their cars have been over the past few years. Obviously got some quick drivers in there as well, but struggled to win championships and things like the Indy 500. Seems like Andretti's always really good in qualifying, maybe struggles a little bit in the races to get things over the line sometimes, whether that's execution or whatever. But it feels like you kind of fit into this perfectly in a way, because you've always been someone who's raced better than you've qualified. You've obviously shown in races that your racecraft's very good and that you've been able to always move forward and score good results for your previous team. So I guess, do you feel like your kind of your positives really suit Andretti's kind of, I don't know if weaknesses is the right way to put it, but you kind of fit in together well in that sense that you're, you know, kind of coming in to help this team move forward?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think so. I think that's sort of the goal, of course. I think that's what Andretti has seen in me as well. You know, the consistency I've had the last, especially last 3 years, you know, I've been always, you know, pretty much, I don't know exactly the statistics, but like over 90% of the races, I think I've been in the top 10. And, you know, that consistency is a bit what obviously Andretti has been lacking. They have fast cars and you know, they win races and put it on pole positions and stuff like that. But yeah, they have been having difficulties to be consistent over a season. So obviously that's the hope, that I could come into the team with my type of, you know, being as a driver, as a person, and hopefully help that consistency and sort of raise that level as a team. And I think for me personally, you know, I like the idea of having a fast qualifying car like Andre seemed to have. I think if I can get on top of that car and qualify a bit higher, I feel like my biggest strength is my racecraft and sort of being smart and, you know, being strong in the races. So that combination of having a strong qualifying car and so my racecraft should be, in my head, it sounds like a perfect combination, but I also, you know, understand that it's going to be a transition period and it's going to take some time, you know, to get used to everything. But I think the potential is definitely there, and that's what excites me.
I guess your old team had some very good teammates there as well in Scott Dixon, Alex Palou, and the likes of, plenty of drivers to race alongside there. But you're coming in with two very young American drivers, Colton Herta and Kyle Kirkwood. I guess kind of interested to kind of ask you how you feel like you're going to fit in with them. I know you obviously have raced alongside them and you know them kind of briefly from in the paddock, but how do you feel like this lineup's kind of shaping up for next season and what you guys can kind of do together as a trio, as well as just what you bring to the team personally?
I think it's an extremely strong lineup. I think the sort of mix of experience and sort of background that we have is going to match each other very well. I think, you know, all three of us needs to have the goal to win, you know, and I think we can compete for wins and podiums on any given weekend. And I think also we should be able to push each other to get the most out of each and every one of us. So I'm really excited about that lineup. I know Colton and Kyle a little bit, and then obviously going to get to know them more and more here going forward, but they seem like really good guys and, you know, easy going. And I think our personalities is going to match quite well as well. So I'm super excited. I think we have one of the strongest driver lineups in the series. So if we can work well together and sort of lead a team together and push as a team, I think we can really, you know, make some big strides.
Kind of interested to, I know you're a guy who thinks about everything and you're very analytical and you don't leave anything, kind of no stone unturned kind of approach to things. I'm kind of interested, especially from, you know, we'll have some listeners who know you from Formula One who'll be tuning in from that side of things. And I guess it's become more obvious to me recently, at least, that in IndyCar, the development war is still there. The dampers and how that's kind of matched to the aero and how you guys kind of set the cars up a different team to team. And maybe people watching IndyCar from the outside will see, you know, 27 cars that look the same, just the different paint schemes, but underneath they're obviously very different. I'm kind of interested in how much research you kind of did into Andretti. I know their car understeers a little bit compared to some of the other teams in the way they set up. It's kind of good example of IndyCar being like still having a development war behind the scenes. You know, it's obviously a lot smaller scale than what Formula One would be, but there's still a lot going on behind the scenes that makes the cars, you know, perform and set up in different ways. So how much research did you do into that, you know, looking at where you were going to move when you left Ganassi, and how do you feel your style will kind of suit the Andretti car?
Yeah, I think you're right there. I think it's interesting. I've been to a few different teams, but I know, you know, some drivers have driven for many different teams, and it's, you know, it's crazy how a one spec series can have so many different philosophies on how to set up a car. And, you know, yes, these cars, you can have a million different combinations of, you know, setups on them, but it's still, you would think after being around for 10 plus years that most teams would be like sort of on the same page on setup, but it's actually, that's not the case. You know, everyone has their own sort of type of philosophy around it, and obviously the dampers is a big part of that, because that's the biggest area where you can make a difference. And you know, the bigger teams obviously put a lot of money and effort into developing them and suiting them for every type of track. And I think that's where, you know, in Ganassi we made big strides the last few years, where we really stepped it up on the damper program, and I felt like I was a big part of that as well. You know, I worked very hard with the damper people in Ganassi, and me and my engineer Brad there in Ganassi, we were really pushing hard on the damper development. So obviously that's something I'm hoping I can bring to Andretti and help them in that department. But obviously there as well, you know, they build their own dampers in a completely different way and how Ganassi does. So it's, you know, and that obviously influences the car setup a lot as well. So it's all quite different between teams to teams. I think coming back to your question there, one thing that I think is going to suit me is the sort of characteristic of the Andretti car. Like you said, I haven't driven it now on a road course yet, but from what I understand, they have a very strong rear of the car, good traction, an understeery type of car, and that's the type of car I like. I really drive the car from the rear end. I need to be able to lean on the rear going into the corners, and if I can do that, I sort of sort out the rest. So that was something that definitely went into my, you know, one of the pros and cons when I was looking at different teams before deciding, was the type of car that I think that that I understand Andretti has. I think that's going to suit the way I drive a race car.
I think it's interesting as well, you'll be working with Olivier Boisson, and he was one of the guys who, well, he's worked with Romain Grosjean, and he's one of the people who kind of kicked all this off for me, thinking about this in a kind of driver move perspective, that Romain's obviously gone from Dale Coyne to Andretti, and the car's been extremely different, and Olivier's been the kind of person overseeing that. And as Romain kind of transitioned into this year, it was clear that Olivier had found something that Romain really liked, and it'd take a little bit of time to develop that. But I guess it must be nice going into a situation where you're working with an engineer who not only has worked with a Formula One driver before from the past, but is also, you know, knows what it's like for a driver to move team, and he's moved teams himself as well. So I guess maybe that gives you a little bit more kind of confidence or a good feeling going in, that you know he's kind of been through a lot of that transition before, and if you do have difficulties, he's going to be a person who can kind of help with that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think also, you know, obviously I'm just starting to get to know Olivier, but I've heard so many good things about him. You know, he's a very highly respected engineer in the paddock, and you know, to work with him is going to be really, really good for me. So I'm excited about that. And already, you know, we did our first test together and already felt like we kicked it off really well and sort of talked the same language or whatever you want to say. So it's no, it's exciting. And I think this category or this series as well, IndyCar, is so much about that relationship between driver and engineer. You know, it's a team sport for sure, but the one you work absolute closest with is your race engineer, and to have, you know, a strong relationship there and sort of understand each other, it's so extremely important to be able to extract those last tenth or whatever you need, you know, in a race weekend.
I kind of want to skip back to a little bit earlier in the season. I think maybe the last time we had you on was after St. Pete, when we were talking about you having your mental coach for this year and how that was going to impact you. And I know a lot of people have asked you about that since, and you've done some more interviews on that and how that's kind of impacted you. And I guess as a kind of follow-up now, we're at the end of the season, I kind of wanted to ask you how that impacted your kind of middle of the season and while all of this like contract stuff was going on for you. Because I guess You've obviously talked about it being quite difficult there, where you were kind of uncertain about your future and not really knowing what was going to happen. Of course, any human being would be that way when you don't know where you're going to be driving next year, or you don't know where your job's going to be in the future. Obviously, there's some uncertainty there. But I guess, do you feel like the whole situation could have been worse if you hadn't have had your mental coach with you this year? And maybe that was a part of, you know, something that really helped you out in that difficult period there?
I haven't thought about it specifically, but I think definitely it has, you know, it's helped me in all types of situations, and for sure around that sort of July, August time, you know, it was very stressful on and off the track, and definitely then, you know, to having some guidance and you know, weekly sessions that we do definitely helped me to you know, cope with everything, and then sort of make sure I could focus on what I needed to focus on, and so on. So like we talked about back then, and I've talked about before, you know, it's so important, the mental side of things in whatever you do. And I think working on that, actively working on it, is something that's very underrated, and I think it's very powerful.
I guess on a similar kind of note, where's your head at in terms of what you think's possible next year? We've talked a little bit about the approaching the team and how you're going to suit the car setup. We talked about your teammates. We talked about Andretti and their kind of performances over the past few years. What does all that add up to for you? And what are the, I don't know if you're a kind of person who makes expectations in terms of like numbers, if you want to finish a certain position in the championship, but is there something you've kind of set your mind on and there's a clear target, or is that something that's going to come with a little bit more testing and a little bit more kind of adapting to the team?
Yeah, we haven't really like sat down and set like specific targets yet. Obviously, as a team, you know, we want to be on a level where we go into every weekend and have the mindset to win the race. You know, that's sort of where we want to be as an organization, and especially with the, you know, resources we have now and the push the team is making, you know, to be a very, very top team. You know, we need to go racing with that mindset. But I think also we need to be humble in the way that, you know, it's a project, it takes time. And also, you know, for me coming from a different team, you know, it's going to take a little bit of time to get used to things. I would love to go out and, you know, win the first race, who knows, but you know, we need to also be thinking long term. And that's why also, you know, for me having a multiple year contract is also, you know, giving that sort of not security, because you always have pressure, but it gives you sort of a different mindset in a way. I think, you know, we need to give it a little bit more time, but definitely we want to be consistently fighting up front. You know, that's what we need to have as a goal. And like I've done the last few years, bring the hard car home in whatever position you can as well, you know, not throwing away finishes and trying to be consistently in the mix. I think that's going to be very important for us.
You won the first race last year, so let's not rule it out. You know, it's a possibility.
I like my street courses, and you know, St. Pete and Long Beach is the first two races, and those were probably my two best, apart from the 500, was my two best performances last year. So you know, I'm definitely, or this year, so I'm definitely bringing that confidence into the first couple of rounds in next year's season for sure.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
I know pretty much every team on the grid probably would have, if not made you an offer, would have wanted to have made you an offer for next season. But what did it mean to you for Andretti to come up? You know, it's not only is it, I guess, a big team that has big aspirations of doing, you know, lots of different things all over the world. It's also a very established IndyCar team. And I guess you've not been... You've been in situations in your career before where you've been wanted by teams, but we knew this was a new thing for you in terms of, you know, the wanting to be paid as a top driver, wanting to get what you deserved as what your results had, you know, what your results are, your results you'd achieved, what they deserved really. So I guess, what did it mean for, you know, someone like Michael to approach you and to want to have you as part of this team, and what impact do you think that will have on your performances for next season?
It means a ton, and you know, it's something I worked all my career towards, having, you know, a position like that, and for me to be, you know, signed by a team like Andretti, you know, and an organization like that is one of the most legendary names in motorsports and, you know, all over the world, and especially here in America, you know, even off track, you know, everyone knows Andretti name. So that feels very special to me and something I'm very proud of. But also just in general, you know, that time there in August, I think I had four or five offers on the table that all were very good, including from you know, my old team Ganassi. And for me, that was a nice feeling to, you know, all the hard work that I've put in, all, you know, those years of working extremely hard, in a way, was sort of, that was paying off now, finally. So it's really cool. And I think it's giving me another boost of confidence. And, you know, I'm going to go into next season with a different feel in a way. So it feels really good. And like I said, it was really cool to be really picked out by a team like Andretti.
Yeah, I guess obviously the team is obviously well known at the moment, or is in the news quite a lot for wanting to go back to F1. I guess, did that come into your sort of thinking at all when you were speaking to Andretti and when you were looking at IndyCar for next year? I'm sure you've probably, I don't know if you've ruled the kind of Formula One chapter at an end for you now, or how you feel about that, but it must be quite interesting from someone who's been in Formula One for such a long time, and you pay such close attention, you have a lot of friends there, you obviously do a Formula One podcast in Swedish as well, and obviously paying a lot of attention there. So I guess, you know, did you think about, even if not as a driver, could you help with advice and you know, something in that kind of just being involved in some way, shape or form? Did that come into your mind, or was it totally IndyCar for you when you were kind of doing all of this?
When I was speaking with Michael, it was purely IndyCar based. Like, we were only talking about IndyCar, so we never really discussed that. But after the deal was done and we were signing everything, then, you know, I have said to Michael that, you know, if you need my help in any shape or form, if, like you said, if that is an advising or helping in different things, or if it's testing, even, you know, driving the car at some point, you know, it's obviously I'm happy to do that. You know, I'm part of the family now. So but yeah, I'm signed for IndyCar, and that's where my focus is. But yeah, if I can help in some other way, I'm of course gonna do that.
For sure. Well, you mentioned just testing just then, and you're out in the car for the first time last week at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, driving on the oval with the new hybrid system that is due to come in for next season. What can you tell us about that, in the sense that I think we've known that hybrids come in for a little while now in IndyCar? There's been a lot of news around it, but I don't think it's been particularly clear to the fans necessarily how that's going to look in terms of what the driver actually has to do behind the wheel, what the process might look like. We've talked a lot about what the system is and how it works, even on this podcast, but not necessarily how it works from a driver's perspective. And I guess a lot of that is because they're spending a lot of time working out how that is actually going to look when it comes to ovals and road and street courses as well. So the simple answer is, we can't tell you how it's going to work because we don't know for sure how it's going to work yet. But you were actually on track with the car on the oval last week. So if you can, why don't you walk us through a little bit how that process works in terms of the regeneration and you know, how it works from a driver's perspective behind the wheel?
Yeah, so basically what you do, or what we did in the test, is that we had a button or a paddle on the wheel where you pressed to regen the battery. And then you had another button where you deployed the battery, the extra power. So simple as that. But then obviously it comes down to a lot. How much do you regen? How much do you deploy? And that's where, you know, IndyCar is still playing quite a bit there with you know, those numbers and how that system should be working. And I can see probably that working different maybe from track to track, and, you know, from ovals to road courses and street courses. But the way it was now in the test, it was fully manual. So you as a driver was fully in control on when to regen and when to deploy. And obviously when we were running in group running, it makes it quite interesting, because then you can sort of play with it and sort of try and be smart and try and catch someone by surprise when you deploy. The battery itself is not super powerful. So it's not like, you know, you press the deploy button and, you know, it's blows you away. You know, it's more, you know, it gives you a bit of a boost on the straights. But it's definitely my hope and what I think could be possible is when we come to the 500 next year, it gives you a little bit more of a tool where you can sort of set up passes in a bit deeper in the field, because someone is out of energy and you have a full battery, so you can sort of use that in a fight position, and then that can be enough for you to make an overtake. So that's sort of what I hope will happen. Obviously, there's going to be more tests here on road courses and street courses, how it works there. I think also it's still a sort of work in progress. They don't know how manual it's going to be. Some people say it's going to go more automatic, which I don't think it should. I want to have it as manual as possible, because I think then you as a driver can actually stand out and do things differently or better than your competitors. But I think, yeah, they're still testing things and trying things, but the system worked well. You know, we drove the whole day. I don't know how many laps we did, 150 laps or something per car, and we were four cars out there. So it seems to be working well, and it's, you know, it's interesting.
I guess anyone who knows how a hybrid system works, usually the brakes where you regenerate the power, right? So how does that work on an oval? Like, where, how is the regeneration happening, and how are you managing that based on the fact that you've got to be flat out around an oval? You can't exactly slam the brakes on. So how does that process kind of work? And I guess that's something you and the drivers were trialing in the draft to try and work out how to manage that, and how to, because you also can't have cars just like totally checking up in the middle of the backstretch, right? Because that would be terrible. So I guess you're also doing a little bit of tactics and learning how to use the system as best as possible.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you were sort of pressing the region going into the corners, and it wasn't slowing the car down massively. Like you said, you're flat out when you do it. So it's not like you can do it with the brakes. So you do when you're flat out, but it does regen and fill up the battery even when you're flat out. And it doesn't like stop the acceleration completely. It just slows you down a little bit. So okay, it's not like very abrupt. So, which is obviously important for the safety. We cannot have when you regen that you're going to, you know, slam the brakes. So it did work quite well, I thought, on the oval, probably better than I expected. So I thought it was working fine.
Awesome. Well, what's your plan now for the rest of the, we call it the off season, but we're in the 16th of October and you've had probably a week off, and then you've been doing all sorts of other stuff. So what's your plan for the rest of the year now, and how much time are you going to get to spend with Andretti and your engineer now before we kind of move into the new year?
Quite a bit. I will, we're quite busy here in the next few months. We have some more test plans with the hybrid here in October, November, December. So that should hopefully keep me busy, and then some simulator days as well. And then, you know, just spending time at the team will be important for me to build those relationships and sort of speed that process up. So I'm gonna be pretty busy, and yeah, because of the hybrid, it will be a bit more driving than usual in an off season, because usually you go like October, November, December without driving anything. So this is definitely more exciting that we get some actual driving.
We're gonna get the opposite, where usually we have drivers complaining that there's not enough seat time in the off season, and now we're gonna have drivers complaining there's too much testing going on.
I'm never gonna complain about that. I'm never good. I always when I get in a race car, it's a good day. So
that's why we like you. Marcus Ericsson, thanks very much for joining us. I know it's been a little while since we last had you on the pod, so great to have you back. Thanks for taking some time to talk about your new move, and we wish you all the best heading into the off season.
Perfect. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Always fun to chat to Marcus. He's got a busy off season coming up with some testing and getting to know his new team. So definitely keep an eye out. I'm sure we'll have some updates from him throughout the off season on how he's getting on with that new team. One of the stories of 2024, I think, how he and his new teammates meshed together. It's been a long time since Andretti's won a championship or an Indy 500. They know that better than anybody. They've been working hard to improve. They've been working hard to kind of right those wrongs and get those big championships that they, you know, their name deserves. Andretti, such a big name in North America in general, never mind just in motorsport. So yeah, they'll definitely be hoping that the IndyCar side of things provides some fruit by the end of next season. So coming up next, we've got Yuri Vips. He's the Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan driver from the last two races of the season. Starred with a phenomenal qualifying performance in Laguna Seca, but also did a very, very good job in Portland as well. A little bit under the radar in terms of where he finished and his qualifying, where the team had maybe missed a little bit with him and Christian Lundgaard in terms of the setup. But actually, his race performance was very strong. And again, did a great job in Laguna Seca. Someone who's looking to establish himself on the grid for next year. So we'll head over and speak to Yuri Vips. Yuri Vips, welcome to the Race IndyCar podcast for your first appearance. Nice to have you on. And I guess I wanted to start with finding out a little bit more about your kind of pre-race experience of IndyCar. Like, was it something you watched when you were a bit younger and something you were kind of, you kind of knew what to expect? Or did you kind of come in and everything was a bit new to you and I guess you were a bit like a rabbit in the headlights or something?
Yeah, thanks for having on, first of all. I mean, yes and no. So I've watched IndyCar, like say regularly since about 2021. I watched pretty much all the races in 22, but 21 I already like grew a lot of interest, you know. And before that, I watched some of the 500s, and like, yeah, it looks like cool racing, which it is. So you see a lot of that on TV, but there's so much like behind the scenes, like the atmosphere that in the paddock and so on that you don't really capture in that. So there was still a lot of like things for me to learn and things that are new, and even like some of the language differences from, you know, European racing to American racing, you know, there was a lot to learn, but it was such a nice experience. Really enjoyed it.
I know some of the drivers who come into IndyCar usually have been like, they've seen it when they've been younger because there's someone from their country has been in the series. And I guess for you, you kind of have this thing with a lot of different, I guess, in single seaters in general. You're kind of the first Estonian kind of get into this kind of elite level, really. So I guess it's kind of weird for you in a way that you don't, you have all these people around you who have all these people they can look up to or people that they've seen racing series before. But for you, it's a little bit different from that perspective.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I think you'll naturally follow it more if you have like someone from your country there. But, you know, I developed an interest in the series like a couple of years ago, as I said. And, you know, in 22, there was Callum and Christian were there, you know, so I knew them from Europe. So I had even more of an interest then. I was like, you know, how are they, you know, getting on? And, you know, how tough is the series? Like, how hard is it to join? So I started like looking into things in 22 as like, because I had, you know, in 22 already had genuine interest in joining it. So yes, I didn't have anyone from my country there, but you know, I think having those guys come over from Europe piqued my interest a little bit because I talked to them and they were already really enjoying it. And yeah.
I guess it's been an interesting kind of transition for you in the sense of like, you don't very often get dropped into the last two races of a season in any series really. So definitely a big challenge for you in terms of having to come in and learn against a load of drivers who've been, you know, racing all year and maybe even have years of experience of racing in IndyCar anyway. Obviously, you did Portland and Laguna Seca. I guess, I mean, I'll ask you this question and you could tell me, but it definitely looked like the highlight of the two races was the qualifying in Laguna Seca, where you did a fantastic job there to qualify seventh. So I guess that was probably the highlight, but it was two very interesting races for you, I guess, being dropped in at the deep end.
Yeah, it was definitely difficult. I mean, yeah, I think it made it even harder because it didn't race in any series this year.
Yeah.
So it took a while in Portland, you know, just to get used to pushing the car again. But, you know, once I arrived at Laguna, to be honest, like the whole weekend, I just felt much more comfortable. Yeah, the whole weekend was just much easier, much more natural. I knew what was going on. I knew how the sort of schedule of the weekend was going to be. And there wasn't really anything that surprised me or was new to me. So, yeah, I think with the performance as well, it was kind of shown, because, you know, we had a great car in both the races, both race weekends, but I think Laguna just extracted much more out of it. But yeah, no, it was good. Like seventh is not normally where I'm like, you know, I'd be happy to qualify, but it is a very tough series, you know? So, yeah, I was a little bit surprised by like how impressed people were by P7, you know, because I don't know, in Europe, you know, if you come to like Formula 2 or something and qualify seventh on, you know, one of the first races, it's good, but it's not like, you know, people were really, really, really happy with it, which I was a little bit surprised about. But yeah, it was still good, you know, the whole weekend we were quick. So yeah, team was happy, I was happy. It was just a shame about the race, but these things happen, you know.
Yeah, I guess with the qualifying, one of the reasons why people I think maybe have a bit of a different perspective in America is just because of the fact that there's like 13 cars from the top teams, because you're allowed to have obviously more than two cars. So like to qualify seventh,
you've beaten like five cars there from the top teams. And obviously that's a big achievement in IndyCar when you've seen how close there's like a thousandth of a tenth or whatever between, you know, graduating from one session to the next. It's obviously very, very tight. And to be able to get up there and be seventh was definitely impressive. I guess what have been some of your biggest challenges in terms of just adapting to the car and kind of learning a little bit about how the car drives and stuff? I know the oversteer and stuff won't be a problem for you, and you're quite an aggressive driver anyway, but what have been some of the challenges for you to kind of adapt?
Yeah, as you said, like the driving styles is very different to Formula 2. And that kind of like, you know, I've tested the car before and that's what I really liked about it as well. But, you know, it's a lot more difficult to drive than anything you do with anything involving Pirelli tires, basically, because you just have to be really smooth, you know, in whatever Formula 3, Formula 2, Formula 1. You can't hustle the car around. And you can hear, which I really enjoy. But then again, I'm racing guys that are just so unbelievably good at it. Like everyone who's at the front end of the IndyCar grid, what really caught me out was they are just 110% committed every lap, whether it's an out lap, warm up lap, any lap, they are just 100% committed. And that also helps, because the way actually the Firestones, you get them to work the best is to just push massively and have these big snaps on the outlaps, and it gets the peak of the tire nicer. So that's still something that I was missing a little bit, I think, in the end. But, you know, that's probably the thing that caught me out the most. But it's so cool that you can do that, because, you know, it's just the complete other end of the spectrum when you come from Europe. You know, you have to really, really take care of the Pirellis. Even on a qualifying, you know, out warm up lap, and then on the cool down lap between the two push laps and so on. But here it's just, you go out of the pits and it's just push, push, push.
Yeah, it's awesome. I guess the style with F2, either because of the Pirellis or just because of how the teams are kind of set up, you kind of come in and you're asked to drive a certain way, or each team has a certain kind of driving style that they want from their driver or that they expect. Whereas, I guess, did you feel like when you came in to Ray Hall, you were quite surprised by kind of how much input you had and how much kind of flexibility there is to kind of, you know, move the car around you a little bit more to suit your style, as opposed to just, you know, having to come in and just drive it the way you're told and not be able to make any kind of big changes to it?
Yes, but I think it's not really because of the teams more. I think it's more because of the tires allow it to. So you can have like a bigger window on your setup, you know. You can set up the car much more to your preference here, I feel, because whether in Europe you just need a nice balance, otherwise you just, you know, the temperature window is so small in the Pirellis that, you know, if you overheat the front or the rear axle, it's not going to be good, you know. So whether even in qualifying, you know, you need to have it very nicely balanced. So also you can't play around with the setup too much in those championships. So I think that's more just coming from the tire being much more forgiving here.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can set up the car differently. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I guess you need that. You need the tire to be able to give you that flexibility, right? You can't just you couldn't do that with a Pirelli. It would be impossible, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But it's not, you know, it is coming from the teams, but there's a reason for it, because it's just the operating window is much, much bigger on the Firestone tires, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Talk to us a little bit about how you're feeling about next year. I know you can't say too much at this stage and things are a bit complicated. As everybody knows, with the IndyCar silly season, things can change very, very quickly depending on who you're talking about at any one time. But I guess with you, how are you kind of feeling about your chances? And maybe if you can tell the listeners kind of where you're at, what your status is at the moment and kind of what you're expecting for next year at the moment.
Yeah, obviously can't say too much, but what I can say, I was really happy to be here. I was very happy to be given a chance by Ray Hall as well, and they were really happy with me as well. So we're just trying to work out something for next year. But if it will happen, and depends, you know, it's still not sure if it's going to be full time or a part time. We'll see. Time will tell, you know. But I'm really, really trying to get on this grid. That's all I can say. And yeah, really enjoyed it.
Yeah. You must have, I guess you must be grateful to Ray Hall after, you know, everything that's happened to you in the past couple of years. You've talked a lot about being able to have that second chance and someone, you know, giving you that opportunity to even just race again, because obviously you're out of a seat in terms of just racing for so long. I guess you must feel a certain level of you know, gratitude to them for just being able to get the chance, even if it ends up only being these two races that you've done. I guess it's still, you know, you've achieved a lot in that sense in those two races.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. 100% right. I'm super, super grateful for that opportunity they gave me. And they gave me an awesome car as well on top of it. So extra thankful for them, for that. And, really, really happy. It was sad that I couldn't repay them, you know, with a good result, but at least we got the money for the leader circle. So in some way, you know, I give back a little bit, but so they were the ones that gave me the opportunity. So very happy with that.
As you've raised it, I was going to ask you about the whole leader circle thing, because like I said earlier on, it was kind of unusual that you kind of, in most series, you don't get dropped into a championship in the last two races, but especially you don't get dropped into the last two races with like so much riding on finishing like 18th or 19th or 20th or 21st. You know, that's such a unusual thing for a driver to be in that position in a championship, especially if you've not raced in IndyCar before or you haven't, you know, you've not been a part of the championship for a long time. So was that kind of, did you feel any extra pressure because of all that whole kind of situation, or were you kind of just at a point where you just knew you just needed to get in the car and just do your best, and there was nothing really else you could do about it at that point?
I mean, I never thought about the leader circle until after lap one in Laguna. So then I was like, oh yeah, we're in trouble, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't think about it otherwise. I knew there was a lot riding on it, but I was like, you know, qualified seventh and probably quicker than these guys, you know, it shouldn't really be an issue. Because Portland, we anyway, like extended a gap to the others, you know, so we were actually in by a good couple points. So we were pretty safe, but then we crashed and I was like, oh no. Might be an issue. But in the end, in a pretty crazy manner, we got it. You know, it was the last lap. I think that Newgarden, I think, overtook Dev or something like this. And basically that's how we got it in the end by a point. So
yeah, it's crazy.
It was pretty crazy. Yeah.
Dev was in the pits and Joseph was on the track, so he was kind of given the lead there. So that was crazy way for everything to work out. I guess finally, I just wanted to ask you, obviously it was a massive news story when you got the drive with Ray Hall and you were able to come over to IndyCar. What did you feel about what was the kind of reaction to it and how you felt, you know, the fans and everybody in the paddock was it welcoming for you? And did you feel like, you know, we talked earlier about that kind of second chance element of it. Did you feel like you were treated well when you came into the paddock, and that, you know, people were genuinely, you know, interested to see what you could do? And maybe even, I know you spoke a little bit about, you know, wanting to be a role model for education and stuff like that in the future. So how was that kind of whole thing coming into the paddock? Now you've done two races and you've actually been in the paddock and in the series. How was that whole thing?
Yeah, it was honestly amazing, the reception I got. I was really surprised. The fans were all very nice to me. Didn't have one bad experience. And also the more experienced drivers, they welcomed me really well, you know. So, was very, very positively surprised by everything, you know. I really, it's kind of like the perfect series for me. I really have nothing bad to say about it. I really enjoyed it, every aspect of it. And that's why I'm pushing really hard to try and get something here full time. So, the reception was amazing from everyone, really, from the organizers to the fans, to other drivers. It was really nice.
Yeah. And even, I guess, I know Bobby and Graham have both talked about, you know, getting emails from Adrian Newey and stuff like that. You know, that to someone like you, that must mean a lot to have somebody like of that stature. And I'm sure there's been other people aside from Adrian Newey. He's just one that I know people have talked about and it's been mentioned in the media and stuff. But he's, you know, for him to be emailing Bobby to kind of give you a reference and say how good you were, you know, to have these kind of these people around you must have helped in that time as well.
Definitely. I knew there was a couple references to Bobby from some people from Red Bull, and I was honestly really surprised and grateful for that as well. It definitely, once I learned about it, it definitely caught me up a little bit, but it was awesome to see.
And you moved to Indy earlier in the year, even before you kind of got the Ray Hall drive, like kind of for the last two races. So how have you found that? It's obviously a big thing to, I know you guys are always traveling and you're used to being all around the world anyway, but how has kind of settling into Indy been? And have you enjoyed the experience just generally in America so far?
Yeah, actually a lot. It's definitely a very different scene from Europe, but no offense to you, Jack, but I enjoyed actually quite a lot more than England. no offense. I really like London, but yeah, I mean, I really like the area here as well. You know, it's just, it's nice and quiet. It's clean. There's a lot to do. And yeah, there's a lot of like drivers around as well. So you got like a bit of a community. And yeah, it's a good area and of Indy where I am. And I enjoy it.
We're never having you back on the pod again after you've criticized England. That's the big podcast.
No. I'm not. Okay. Let me clarify. I'm not criticizing. I like it more here. But England was nice. But yeah, London, I really, really enjoy. But I've got nothing bad to say about England necessarily.
It's all right.
Just a little bit nicer. Yeah,
Indy's very nice too. We can talk about Indy all day. That's a very cool place.
Yeah.
Yuri, thanks so much for coming on the pod. We really appreciate it. We wish you the best of luck with finding your seat for next season. And hopefully we'll have you back on when you do have a full-time ride in IndyCar next year with a bit of luck.
Hope so. But thank you so much for having me on, Jack. And hope to see you soon.
All right, that was Yuri. Very, very interesting driver. It was fantastic to have him over in IndyCar for the last two races of the season. Obviously someone who has caused controversy in his past, has tried to right those wrongs. And as we talked a little about with him there, you know, it was always going to be an interesting kind of situation where he arrived in America to see how he was met, what kind of what the feeling was towards him coming over and doing IndyCar. And it definitely felt like people have been willing to give him a second chance after the learning that he's done. So an interesting story, Yuri. Great to talk to him. And we just want to round up a little bit of news before we finish off the pod. One thing that's happened, a very big piece of news that's happened since we last recorded a pod, was Romain Grosjean confirming that he's basically in arbitration proceedings with Andretti over his future. So not happy with how his Andretti tenure came to an end this season. His statement confirming the arbitration, basically confirming also that he is not going to drive for Andretti again. So a bit of confirmation of something that we already knew had happened. But, you know, getting it from the horse's mouth is always good. Next steps, Roman, his lawyers and Andretti will be trying to hash out how this situation moves forward. Arbitration is a process of trying not to go to court, basically, so doing everything you can to avoid you know, bringing about a legal case. So they'll be working hard in the background now, I'm sure. Roman's off testing the Lamborghini hypercar and trying to get that ready for IMSA homologation, so he's very busy in terms of driving, and I'm sure everyone will be keeping a close eye on his future, which is uncertain at the moment. A lot of people think Dale Coyne was his you know, most likely destination after his IndyCar debut there in 2021. There's been some other stories since. Ed Carpenter was another one that felt like definitely an outsider option for Roman. I don't think that one's necessarily going to happen. But our friend Marshall Pruitt from Racer Mag has reported that Hunkos Hollinger could be on the table for Romain Grosjean. So we'll keep a close eye on that, because we've previously expected Callum Ilott and Agustin Canapino to come back at Hunkos, and we're not expecting them to expand in terms of numbers of entry at the moment. So fitting in Roman would be a very big story, because it means likely one of those two drivers would not be there next season. So we'll keep an eye on that. Obviously driving sports cars full-time or more so than he's doing now already could be an option for Roman as well. But I think a lot of people don't want to see his top level kind of single seater career come to an end just yet. I think people, there's quite a few fans out there who still want to see and believe that he can do a good job given the opportunity. So we'll keep a close eye on that. That being the biggest kind of news story in the gap. I think Kyle Kirkwood's contract extension was also confirmed between the last two episodes. So we should mention that one as well. Kyle obviously winning two races last year, and will be alongside Marcus Ericsson, who we spoke to earlier in the season next year. So an interesting driver move there, and I think a very obvious one that people expected, that Andretti would move to try and tie down Kyle. He would have been out of contract at the end of next season, I think. So getting his contract extended was a great move in terms of just taking him off the silly season and keeping him in the Andretti camp. Andretti also getting the FIA approval to enter Formula One in the gap since our last episode as well. So now they're waiting for the Formula One teams, I guess, and Formula One itself to approve them. Whether that's going to happen or not, we'll have to wait and see. But you can head over to the-race.com for a lot more on that. You can also head to our YouTube channel, The Race. If you search that, you will find it on YouTube, where we've done a video on Romain Grosjean's arbitration proceedings and where his big move to Andretti went so wrong. And yeah, we'll be back soon with another episode of the Race IndyCar podcast. More interviews. I'm sure there'll be some more news before the end of the year that we'll come back for. And we've obviously got the hybrid testing, which is going to play a big part in the kind of news cycle. As JR and I discussed, it's going to be a very tight run to the finish line with that, getting it implemented for next season. They're obviously testing a lot, so they'll be very hopeful that they can get any issues ironed out and that they can get all of the production done and that they can work out how they're going to use the system properly and get all of that decided before St. Pete next year, which is, it's going to come up quickly. So we'll be back next time with the Race IndyCar podcast.
The Athletic.